So I wanted to do things this way today, because in that passage, you might expect after such an extraordinary hymn of praise, the Apostle Paul might say, therefore, keep continuing to be spiritually worshiping God with your souls. Let them come alive in worship. But what he actually instructs the Romans to do is to have a proper, reasonable, acceptable response to God will involve embodied worship. With who we are, here and now, with these gifts that God has given us, good bodies, which, as I said to you last week, in the resurrection of Jesus, we are given a preview of our own, what we will be like as he came amongst his disciples. The reason I wanted to get voices other than mine to speak today was because this is the lived experience of many of us in the room, but many of us in the room don't get to share it or hear it. Just stories of how we are living the Jesus life as embodied believers, not as disembodied spirits. So you're going to hear from a few different people here today, and I've asked them some specific questions that relate to who they are, whom God has made them, the bodies and how they're using them that God gave them. So I've got Lydia, Ruth, Peter, and Alex. Can you guys come up the front and take your seat? How special is this? I love this. This is very comfortable. Let's give them a round of applause. Why not? Choose away. Very telling who gets which seat. Ah, this says a lot about you. No, not really. What does it say about me that I have the wing chair? I'm not sure. So maybe just a soft start to tell us a little bit about, when we think about work, how have each of you thought about that concept, that truth, over your lives? And that will give us a bit of an introduction to what your current work might be. But how have you journeyed through life and thought about work? Who wants to go first? Who's brave? I'm just going to ask. Peter, how about you go first?
Thanks, Rob. You won't believe what my first job was. I was a telegram boy. Most people don't have a clue what a telegram was. Think of email, and it's kind of like a very, very, very slow version of that. So I rode a bike and carried messages out to people. This was not a full-time job. It was just a way of getting money, and that's how work began for me, a way of getting a bit of pocket money. And I've been through many different jobs since then, and things have changed quite a lot in terms of how I have felt about work. But maybe later.
Thank you. Anyone else want to share how their attitude to work has changed over time? Thanks, Lydia.
Yeah, I feel like it's significantly changed.
Yeah, I feel like my concept and attitude towards work's really changed over time. And I think a lot of that has come down to how I grew up. I grew up in a broken family. And as I started to go into schooling and then and work, and I studied to be a nurse, I worked very hard. And I always felt like I had to work really hard. And then I started going to church in my early 20s, and I really threw myself again into working hard and doing ministry. And it wasn't actually until I'm now 35, but in my early 30s, as a family, we went through quite a hard time. And I had to step back from, well, we both had to step back, my husband and I, from a lot of things and ministry. I was still working as a nurse, and I've always really enjoyed that. But I realized a lot of what I was doing in terms of work was actually because I was trying to earn God's love. And so I guess in a sense it has changed because, my heart now really is I want to be doing what I really feel God is calling me to and leading me to. And And part of that is I really love being a mum and I really love nursing and just sort of embracing this time of being in the season of family. So it's really changed over time.
I'm going to stay with you a bit longer because that you've started something good there. So since being a mum, what's God been teaching you about his fatherhood?
So much, because I really struggled to see God as a good father because I didn't experience that as a child. And so being a parent, I really feel like God has started to expose a lot of my heart and really start to show who he is. And as I've parented, I've started to see the heart of the father and slowly. And I'm still very much on this journey, but God is unpacking stuff and exposing things. And I just love what God has been bringing out about how I see him and just his characteristics.
Thank you for sharing that. Let's keep on a similar train with Ruth. So you are a mum, but you're also other things. So this term working mother, as all of us have heard that term, might have some problems. Tell us, why not, a little bit about what might be some of the underlying assumptions that are faulty about that phrase.
First, I just want to say I really like this question. I have had a little bit of time to think about it, which has been really helpful. I want to say three things about the phrase. So working mothers as a phrase, I think, has three issues with it. The first bit is to do with the working part of it. Words mean things. We all implicitly understand this phrase to mean paid work, but that's not what that word is. And it kind of creates this difference between mothers who are doing paid work and doing unpaid work. We know that if you're a mum not in the workforce, you're still doing work. And I think that phrase can really devalue that. And it takes away not just the pay aspect, but also the worth and the respect kind of aspect. So that's my first issue with the phrase. The second issue is we don't talk about working dads. When a man becomes a father, we don't start kind of couching how we talk about his role in that way. So there's definitely a focus there on kind of the woman in that way. I had a little bit of a think, and the closest phrase I think we use for men in this term is family man. But interestingly, don't talk about family women. It's just a really interesting kind of issue with that. Third issue with the phrase, I think, is ultimately that it's a stereotype. I think it's one our society has somewhat outgrown. My understanding is it kind of came into use more in like the 70s to do with sociocultural stuff happening there. And so I think it's not accurate. And I think it sets up this expectation of who someone is. And I find it really interesting how we use this phrase, like where we see it seen, like its context. We can use it in demography, like describing groups of people, but I don't think it's accurate, like I've said, with the first two points. And then also the way we use it, the tone around it, I think is generally one of kind of focus on either criticism or judgment. Like that's usually how it's deployed, and the way words are deployed and phrases deployed, I think, is quite important. So I think it helps reveal things about our society. So that's my thought on that phrase.
That's great. Thank you, Ruth. Lots of nods in the room. Just a thought. What might be a better way? And how do you describe yourself?
My goodness. I thought you might ask this. I don't have a clear answer. I ran through a few things because even things like talking about professional mums, it's always the opposite. Like, well, does that mean everyone else is an amateur? Like, what's going on here? I think it's hard, and I think we struggle to describe groups, particularly, I think, because we have this range of experience. So I'm we could call me a working mum with all the issues that contains, but I work on part-time. The experience of a lot of women may be, we may have mothers who are working full-time, part-time, mothers who are taking a break because they're on maternity leave, but who plan to return to the workforce. So I think it's quite it's difficult to label something with so much inherent nuance. That's, I think, a big issue.
Fantastic. I agree. Many people here do. Thank you. This takes us a little bit to, I think, a question I wanted to ask you, Peter, about. You've evidently had lots of jobs in your life, and you take quite great pride in telling us you're 70 now. What? Tell us a little bit about calling and vocation. So some Christians would say they've had lots of different jobs over their life, but they've had one calling in life and it's been expressed different ways. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of, in retrospect, often that you start to discern the calling. But before I get onto that, can I just have one little aside about the labelling thing, that many years ago I had a period where I was unemployed. That's an interesting term, isn't it? Unemployed, you don't have work. And I became what I described as a house husband. And I used to go to the mothers group at school. And I learned how to plait my youngest daughter's hair. Was that my calling? Look, in a way it was. At the time, my calling was to be a loving parent and to step into the gap that was there in our family situation. Mm-hmm. But to go on to the kind of longer perspective, I went to Ridley College and did a theology degree after I'd already studied at university in an environmental studies degree. And when I went to Ridley, I was testing a calling of was I called to full-time ministry. And the longer I was there, the less I discerned that I was called to that ordained kind of ministry. I have some theological issues with that. Won't get into that. But a really strange thing happened was that I actually enjoyed writing my assignments. And I got really good marks for my assignments, for essays on St. Paul or on the study of particular words in the book of Jeremiah or whatever it was. I've discovered that I could write. And so I think, to kind of condense it, I guess I've discovered that I've had a calling that involves the environment and theology and writing. And that's something I've only been able to discern as various jobs have come and gone. But the thing that stayed there is the desire to communicate about the world that God's made and my experience of it.
Thank you. Alex, describe your job for us and why it's a great nexus between what you're passionate about and what you're good at and faith.
Thank you. This is highlighting for me, though, the benefits of going first. It's always good to... I'm less sure about following the quality of these responses. So I work as the head of strategy for MyState. So it's a relatively senior role in a small bank in the scheme of things, but it's listed on the stock exchange. So there's a number of things I have responsibility for, and I guess the nexus between what I do and my faith has been I've had the privilege of being able to use the tools I use day to day, the analytical skills, the financial skills, how to think about problems, how to sort of bring people along on the journey of what you're trying to achieve, and apply that in ministry context, which I've hugely enjoyed. And I think probably what's one of the big learnings for me has been that you can ministry, and if you take that in the very widest of senses, and business, they're different things, but the relational elements or the relational importance of ministry has a really fabulous learnings for business. And equally, the tools of how business thinks about problems have applications for ministry, because while I personally think that we can absolutely have confidence in God's provision, God has also provided us, with each of us, with different skills and talents and abilities and attributes. And I think I've been fortunate enough to bring what I do in a work sense, I've been able to bring those to a ministry sense, because it's hard to play. It's hard to sort of articulate the one ministry program might be better than another, but how do we think about them and how do we work out how we fund them? They're all important and valuable things.
I'll keep with you for a bit. Some people might think working for a bank and being a Christian can't go in the same sentence. So, you know, you're not one of the big four. You might be one of the little rest of them. But how can following Jesus and working at that level that you do, how does that go together? And what does that mean for your choices in the workplace and your character in the workplace?
I think for me, it's about the, so to go the point about, it's about consistency of character. So I value relationships very highly. There's lots of ways to approach a relationship, but I think I see each as an opportunity to learn something about the other person or people. And I think then that over time and the consistency of your character and your interactions builds a platform so that when the hard decisions come, you've actually got a firm foundation. You can have difficult conversations or difficult exchanges with people. They're done from a place that is hopefully right and good. And it means that you can, your character has been on display for a period of time, and then people will understand that what you're trying to, they'll give you the benefit of the doubt with luck. And that's how I would view it. I think what makes it different is, you know, you're hopeful that people will see in the quality of your interactions, they'll hopefully be seeking to ask, what's different about that person? You know, and you find opportunities to talk about what you might have done at the weekend. So I'll try, and much as I don't always get to share Jesus, you might share that you, the family, we prioritize going to church. Oh, what's that all about? Or you find these moments to sort of share. There might be small things, but then taken on a long journey, you know, you've got the long game to work with.
Thanks. And feel free, anyone who wants to interject. You have a microphone, so you're about as loud as me. Lydia, I preached last week about the resurrection and how when we do work in the name of the Lord, nothing's in vain. Tell us a bit about how you relate to that.
Yeah, I think, I really relate to that. And I think in the past, I would often, I guess, really strive or feel like I have to be doing all of this stuff. And that came down to, you know, when I'd reflect on that, actually what was going on is I felt like I had to earn God's love. But over time, I think just really recognizing and sitting with God that everything is so precious and valuable to Him, and the way that we are unique, He sees that. And so quite often I think we can compare, or I certainly can. You know, you get people that are evangelists and are preaching to thousands, and you see them bringing, you know, hundreds and thousands of people to the Lord. And then you have, you know, a parent that maybe have quite a few kids that are young, and it's hard to get out of the house. And for them, they're needing to be home and being really present with their kids. But there's, you know, so much that they're investing into the next generation. And sometimes that's not really seen. So I think, just continuing to sit with God and see how He views each of us and what we do as so valuable.
Thank you. In a similar vein, Peter, you mentioned one of the things God's given you the passion and gifts to do is write. And that's word creation. That's universe creation in some senses, the being able to make a piece of writing out of nothing. Tell us a bit about how that connects with God, the Creator, whom I know that you love His creation. Yeah.
I come back to something that J.R.R. Tolkien, the writer of The Lord of the Rings, wrote. He was a Catholic Christian, and he said that we are sub-creators because we are made in the image of a Creator. And I've always carried that through my working life, that every single one of us is creative. And I've used that with my staff when I was a manager, and many have said, oh no, I'm not creative at all, I'm an accountant. And I said, ah, oh, yes, but you could be a creative accountant, which I didn't mean in the bad sense, Alex, but you can be a creative banker, people can be creative at sport, obviously in the arts. So being made in the image of a Creator means that we have the ability to be creative. And in my case, I suppose it comes down to words and how I express them in writing. And it's much easier to express it in writing than when you're sitting here like this, because you can edit. So if I ever see a video of this, I'll go, oh, and scrub it out.
You're doing a great job. So this is a question to all of you, and feel free to jump in where you'd like. We just unpacked, thank you, Ruth, what might be an unhelpful cliche in working mum. Another unhelpful cliche is the work-life balance. So tell us a bit about, well, your reaction to that phrase, and then maybe a snippet of how you try to rest as well as work.
I can have a go. I think it's not quite, I wouldn't want to equate it with working mothers, and it's not of that category, but I think it's one of those phrases that does get used a lot. I think for me personally, I think it's around setting boundaries, and making sure there's clear time able to be allocated to both things. So you're present at work and with your family, or it might be all the things that you find important that provide balance to your life. I think, at the risk of sounding controversial, it can sometimes be used in a way that might say, I'm going to have a work-life balance kind of day, and I'm not going to bring my best self to work equally. It could be used the other way around. Oh, I'm really, really busy today, you know, and you say that to your significant other. You know, can you just do a bit more with the family today? I think it's about how you've got to set boundaries, but it's got to be, at risk of using another word, but, you know, you've got to be a bit authentic about it and how you approach it. It's not a get out of jail free phrase.
Anyone else want to have a stab?
So, I mean, it's helpful in that it reminds you need a balance. Like, I think that's the helpful thing about the phrase. I think something that's really interesting is it sort of focuses on, like, the two are exclusive. Like, you know, you've got your work and then you've got your life. And that the idea is that, you know, I think the implication behind it is that you're probably putting all your energy, you know, maybe it's all meant to be going to your work, or it's all meant to be going to your life. But the idea is, well, you're trying to put it into both. And I think in the secular world, we've got, you know, focus on work, focus on family life. This is from my perspective. I think as Christians, we also kind of look at that and go, well, why am I trying to have this balance? Why am I trying to do this? I'm trying to glorify my creator by bringing my best to work and loving my family. And then also thinking about this from the kind of mum kind of side of things, you know, putting into my family and raising my kids to know and love Jesus. So I think, helpful to remind that you want focus on both. The balance, things are going to shift one way or the other sometimes, and you've got to have a flexibility in that. And I think being too rigid with stuff can be unhelpful, because there will be seasons where, you know, you will need to focus more on family sided stuff. I mean, I speak from the experience of having, you know, a sick child throws everything out, and needing the flexibility to be able to go, oh, I can't, you know, can't work today, or, you know, and figuring out within the family unit of, okay, what does that mean for me and my husband? We're going to decide who's looking after the sick child. But having that grace and flexibility, that's a systems thing in our society. I feel privileged that I'm in a sector where that is kind of becoming more understood. I mean, I'm a general practitioner. There's a bit of understanding, there's a long way to go. And then I think similarly in, you know, in family life, the understanding of going, well, sometimes we just need to lower our expectations, not in a way of lowering our standards, but just having a spirit of grace of going, well, what can we do to continue on in a way that's helpful and healthy.
I want to ask you, Pete, because technically, when someone's retired, which is another buzzword, they don't work anymore. That's what people think. So tell us a bit about your reaction to that.
I want to be a bit controversial too, and say that I think for men, work is often a get out of jail card. Oh, I'm sorry, I've got to go to work, or I'm sorry, I've got a meeting, or I'm going for a promotion and I have to spend a lot of time on. And it gets you away from screaming kids and from dishes and cooking and whatever else. And I think that's wrong. But that's not answering your question. So the question was, from the perspective of being retired, look, I think that my identity is not in my job. And that's a long, hard lesson for a lot of people. Our identity comes in being a loved child of God. And there, that position means that whatever you are doing, you are trying to reflect that, and you are trying to bring that, whether it's being a parent, plaiting your child's hair, washing up, going to work, sitting in a meeting. And there's one other little example that I found really helpful in my life. And perhaps controversially, I've made occasionally a sacrament out of hanging up the washing. And by that I mean that as I occasionally, not all the time, otherwise I'd go crazy, but as I hang up the washing, I'm thinking of and praying for the person whose clothes I'm putting up on the line, because it's a job that needs to be done. It's important. We like to have clean clothes, but there's that extra element of counting the blessing of who that wearer of that shirt is, or who used that towel, and it's a way of expressing that gift of being a beloved child of God in my everyday life.
It's very special. Like I was saying last week, there is no, and Noel said it week one, there's no sacred secular divide, and that's like making sacred the secular. Like putting clothes out doesn't seem to appear to be a particularly Christian task, but yeah. Yep, Francis of Assisi. Brother Lawrence, practicing the presence of God in the kitchen. We're going to wrap up in a moment. I would like to give the floor to these guys if there's been any thread that has been pulled and you go, I'd like to explore that a bit more, or ask even each other a question, just to say one final word to us as a congregation today.
Question for Peter. Just looking back from the perspective of your working life, is there any particular insight that you have that you'd share that stands out? If you were going to give advice to, say, a younger Christian?
Yeah, look, it's probably along the lines of, on the one hand, working hard and doing a good job, and on the other hand, not having your identity entirely in that job. I worked for National Parks for 25 years, and when I retired, I had this sort of sense of emptiness about, when I can't talk about our national parks anymore, it's somebody else's. And then I realised that before I worked for National Parks, I enjoyed and loved being out in national parks and wildlife, etc. So it was helpful to kind of see that there is a before and an after of work, and that the work isn't the be-all and end-all, and it's not your identity. So I suppose I would say things along those lines.
That's a good place to finish, I think. Please thank the panel for me.